The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 25 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we survived PAX. We are back in one piece after being kidnapped by the Eldrazi. No thanks to Katie, who wasn't there to save us.
I know. I was fighting from afar. But they're so big and I'm so small. Yeah.
She was using her mind magic.
The minute that I saw the Eldrazi photo opportunity, I was like, we need to do that and send that picture to Katie, because that is the perfect wish you were here kind of picture.
I got it while I was at work, and I was like, look, guys, my podcast people are being kidnapped, and they were all like, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, never mind. It's cool to me.
Well, even though you weren't there, Katie, you did come up a lot in conversation. Like, there were plenty of times where we were doing something and we would say, oh gosh, we wish Katie was here, or oh gosh, Katie would enjoy this. You were definitely on our minds this weekend.
Oh, good. I miss being there. I kept seeing all your posts and things, and I was like, oh, jelly belly.
And Chris even bought you a little something.
I did.
Yeah.
What? What is it?
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise, but it's a personal surprise. Like, she got something for each of us, and it's very individual, and once you see it, you'll have to talk about it on the show.
Okay. When will I see it? Is this, like, years from now?
No. I was just going to get your address and send it to you in the mail.
Oh, okay.
Cut to us doing episode 107, and Katie's like, hey, you guys, I finally got that necklace from PAX 2015.
Erin, you ruined the surprise.
Sorry. Shoutouts this week. We have a brand new review on iTunes from Tony Haust. Sorry if I mispronounced your name, Tony. And Tony called our show the perfect place to go to hear recent news of what's going on in Magic from the more social side. The hosts are all amazing and offer much needed different perspectives on the game. This is the one Magic podcast that my girlfriend also enjoys and likes to listen to as well. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much, Tony. Woman of Excellence this week is none other than our friend Tifa Robles, who is the founder of Lady Planeswalker Society. LPS was responsible for the Learn to Play area at PAX, which Hallie and I volunteered at over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Tifa did a fantastic job managing the queues and making sure that we were comfortable and that we were well taken care of. Wizards was pleased with how well we did, and I know that the people we taught were too. So props to Tifa for putting it all together, and hopefully we get a chance to do it all again next year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So PAX is going to be a very PAX-intensive episode. Let's start off with Thursday, because Thursday was the day that we arrived. That was actually the day before PAX started, and we celebrated by playing at Hallie's house. We got to play her cube. Mm-hmm. And Chris, why don't you tell everybody what you drafted and what you thought of the cube?
I drafted a red-black deck. I thought it'd be cool to cast, like, burn spells and have big flyy creatures and try to just burn people out and be crazy. Didn't get there necessarily, but it was fun. I wanted to be able to draft something that I didn't typically play, so I figured red and black, why not? I liked the cube. I thought there was a lot of really awesome cards in there, not necessarily like super powerful or anything, like to the point that it's like anyone was at a disadvantage, but it was like old favorites or just like awesome cards that I knew, like, everyone else at the table was excited about, too. Like, I think everyone kept on being like, oh, I love this card. Oh, I wish I could draft this, but I'm already, like, in these colors or something. And it was just really cool to see everyone so psyched about it. And every pack that I got past, there was something else that I wish I could have taken aside from the card that I had. So it was a lot of fun. Like, I would definitely recommend Hallie's Cube.
Oh, yay.
I think it was also, I think there was also an aspect of being able to, and maybe it's just because we know each other so well, but there was also this feeling of when a pack would get passed to you, you would know what that person, the person after you was going to take. Like I would look at this and say, oh, Chris is going to love this. Or I would pass the pack to Chris and Chris would be like, oh, this must have been really hard for you to pass because I know that you love this card. And we were seeing that all over the table. People sort of, you know, not necessarily saving cards for the other person, but just being able to spot what they might like. And that was really cool too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I drafted Esper Control, which, you know, going with Chris's idea of doing something outside of our comfort zone, I drafted Ashiok, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Snapcaster Mage. I got to cast Brainstorm for the first time.
How did that feel?
That felt really good, but it was also more skill intensive than I had in mind. You know, people like to joke around about how, you know, saturated Legacy is with Brainstorm, and I've certainly seen people. You know, when I first started playing Legacy, I was very intimidated by Brainstorm, and then I started winning games against the decks that were Brainstorming, and being on the other side of it, there is certainly some decisions there where just because you're drawing three cards, it doesn't necessarily mean that there are cards you want to see, mm-hmm. and then having to decide what you need right now, and then the order in which you want to play them, and remembering not to crack a fetch. I think I did that once, where I was like, okay, got a nice little... crack my marsh flats. Oh, damn. And then I all that hard work would have been for nothing. So it was fun. It was definitely outside of my comfort zone. I had a lot of fun playing the deck. And I don't know if it's my own growth as a player, but I also felt like the archetypes were really easy to identify, mm-hmm. where I was able to see the cards and say, oh, this could go in a Reanimator shell. I'm seeing a little bit of like recursion, maybe some loan poxing happening. I see some burn here. And that made it easier for me to build a deck. I wasn't looking at the cards going, why is this here? What can I do with this? I felt like everything had a home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of what I was going for with the cube. I want the archetypes to be easy enough to identify, but not so rigid that if you're taking a couple of cards that, you know, you can't fit something else in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I saw your really cool deck on Twitter, Erin, and I was like, mm-hmm. that's my girl. Look at it. Yeah. It's beautiful.
I was so impressed she got both Celestial Colonnade and Creeping Tar Pit.
It was great.
Hallie, what did you draft that night?
I drafted White Weenie, I guess. Or, like, White Weenie with a couple of blue tempo spells to back it up. Erin got really upset with me because when I played against her, I used Brago to blink my Mold Rifter a couple times and draw two cards. I was pretty happy about that. I don't know that Erin was. But it was fun. I know Allie Medwin said that she had a lot of fun. Natasha liked her deck. Pretty much everyone told me that they liked their decks. And a couple of people, like Chris, went out of her comfort zone. My friend Kale, who came along, Kale always tries to go out of her comfort zone when she cubes. So it sounded like everybody had a good time. And that's, you know, something that I strive for as a cube designer. I mostly made the cube for selfish reasons. Like, I just wanted to draft all my favorite cards whenever I wanted, but if other people can enjoy it too, then that's just gravy.
Yeah. Cool. I think I was just more confused about Drago. It's Drago, right? Brago.
It's the blue-white flying creature from Conspiracy.
Right. I was confused about that card because I thought that you chose my permanence. Mm-mm. So I remember, you know, when you started doing your thing with it, I was like, oh, she's just going to exile my detention sphere. It's going to come back and I'll detention sphere the Brago. This is going to work great. And then you did your thing and I'm like, I thought you blink my stuff. You're supposed to blink my detention sphere so I can deal with your, why is she drawing so many cards?
Because it feels good.
But then I didn't realize that it was your thing you could blink. And I'm like, oh, right. And then suddenly I was a lot more terrified of that card.
Yeah, so. There was another time in a previous cube draft where I also had Brago and I kept blinking Manowar when my opponent was playing tokens. That was pretty fun too.
That reminds me of the deck that I played the most when we were at the Learn to Play section. So speaking of Learn to Play, let's move on to Friday. So Hallie, you and I taught at the Learn to Play area. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell everybody what that section was like for those who weren't there?
Sure. So if you came into the annex, you know, once you got past the giant Eldrazi that was destroying lampposts and police cars, you got into the annex and there was basically a table where they were sort of like telling you about different things you could do. And directly behind that were two tables of Learn to Play, which was run by the Lady Planeswalker Society, as Aaron said. So we had a group of teachers there every day. We had these awesome playmats that Wizards gave us that had sort of like the zones for your library and your graveyard. It has, you know, several of the parts of the turn listed on the playmat, which was really great. And we had the five sample decks that they give out at PAX every year, the sort of the monocolored intro packs or intro decks, whatever they call them, with, you know, 30 cards, one rare, a couple uncommons, lots of commons, just like very basic cards. And we were using those to teach players how to play the game. And it was really cool for me because it was great to see, you know, the learning moment, like the moment when people just got it. Because there were a couple people who came up and were like, oh, I've never heard of this game before. Or, oh, I tried to learn once and the person who taught me didn't explain it very well. Can you help clear things up for me? And it was just so cool and so rewarding to be able to help people. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a favorite person that you met or like an experience that really blew you away?
There was one girl that I played against who was just amazing. She was understanding the game so well that I was kind of like, okay, let me go a little bit more in depth with you. I get to do stuff in response to you doing stuff. Let's talk about the stack a little bit. And like, she had, I wasn't really doing that with other players. I was mostly just sticking to like sorcery speed interaction for the sake of just making it simple. But this one girl just, like, she beat me fair and square. Like, I didn't go easy on her, and she was just, like, she just understood everything. She understood, like, she was playing the black deck, and that one had a bunch of triggered abilities in it that she totally understood. And she was just awesome, and gave her a business card, and she said she would come to LPS soon, so I'm hoping to see her again soon.
Awesome. Awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, I can honestly say that most of the people that beat me did so fair and square. Like, I didn't really pull very many punches. Mm-hmm. You know, they picked up on things very well. They were able to see combos that I didn't see. Like, I know the red deck had Act of Treason and Fiery Conclusion.
Yep.
And I didn't tell them that those things went together. And so, you know, the majority of people who played that deck were able to look at that and say, hey, can I sacrifice something if it's not really mine? And like, if I take yours, and I was like, why don't you try and find out? And then they would, and it would happen, and they'd be like, I want to do it again. Can I have another Act of Treason? Can I do this? And it's like, oh man, I've created a monster. And yeah, that was a really good feeling. I'd say my favorite interaction was, I had two of them. So the first one was this girl, and Tifa actually sent her over to me personally. And Tifa said, Aaron, I think we have somebody who wants to play black here. And I was like, well, send her over. And, mm-hmm. and she sat down. I think her name was Megan, and she was really lovely. And she took to black very well. She understood what the kill spells did. You know, she was fine with discarding and things like that. But I remember when we were done playing, she looked at me and she was like, can I just play black all the time? And I took her hand and was like, you sure can. And I gave her the black deck and she was so excited. And she's like, why would I want to play any other color? This just does everything I need. And that made me feel really good. And then I think the best part for me about this whole thing was the stories, like getting to know these people and, you know, hearing them say, oh, I've been gaming for this long. Or my other favorite person that I met was this girl. And she came up to the table and she said that her mom taught her how to play.
Awesome.
Now, not only is the game so old that she's like second generation, but that her mom was first generation Magic player. Like, that was really cool. So she was telling me about what her mom gave her, because apparently her mom gave her a lot of cards. And she was just like, oh, you know, I just put them together and played a black and green deck. It's my favorite color. And I'm like, mine too. And then, so we're kind of talking. And then I noticed that she's wearing this very unique looking outfit. And I didn't want to assume she was cosplaying. Like, I was like, maybe she just has really eclectic taste. So I asked her, I was like, you know, if you don't mind me asking, but is this a costume? And she was like, oh, you know, I just got done playing a Malkavian, some Vampire the Masquerade. And I was like, I played a Giovanni! And I played Vampire the Masquerade too, and we just kept bonding, and everything she said was something I had in common with her, and she was somebody that I would totally hang out with if I wasn't teaching and if I wasn't at PAX, and you know, just meeting these people and getting to hear their stories and finding things in common with them, making those connections, that's what made the whole event so awesome for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the children too, like getting like the little kids that are going to be like third generation Magic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I taught an elementary school-aged girl how to play. She was a little slow to get it. Like, it took maybe, like, 6 or 7 turns before she started, like, you know, taking all her turn, like, doing all the parts of her turn on her own without me sort of, like, guiding her. But there was one point where she realized she was getting kind of mana flooded in the game we played, and she was playing the black deck also. Mm-hmm. And she noticed that her nightmare, which was the rare creature in her deck, kept getting bigger every time she played a land. And she was like, oh, it's not so bad that I keep drawing lands. So she just kept playing lands and just hitting me with big 8/8 flying creatures. And it was pretty cool. She was just so excited.
Yeah.
So the decks were like, were they like different level of skills? Like there's like a super introductory black deck and there's like a more difficult one? Or how did that work with...
They were all basically of similar power level. I would say the green one was probably the most straightforward, but they were all pretty new player friendly.
Okay.
Although I will say, I know Melissa DeTora, who I actually sat next to the first day, she felt that black and blue were a little more complicated. Like I know personally, you know, she told me, she indicated that I shouldn't, not that I shouldn't, but she felt that black was better against a more experienced opponent just because, you know, she felt that, you know, killing things and discarding things might not be as fun for a new player. Mm-hmm. So she was like, you know, if the person indicates that they have some experience with magic, black might be a little better for them. But to take a completely green person and just start killing all their stuff, mm-hmm. you know, she was concerned that that might not be the best experience for them. And I know blue was really heavy on prowess. Like, mm-hmm. I enjoyed playing blue a lot. Like, I was using Jesse and Thief quite a lot in the Owl, and so I enjoyed blue, but I also felt like blue in a completely new player's hand didn't really go so well.
See, I actually had a couple new players, and maybe these were people who had experience with other games, mm-hmm. But I had several people come to me and want to play blue, because what I did was I basically just laid out all the decks in front of them, told them sort of in 1 or 2 sentences what the decks were about and what they did, and mm-hmm. let them choose for themselves what they wanted to do. And I'll tell you that most of the people who played blue had so much fun. Like, mm-hmm. they were just like, they had Separatist Void Mage was in the deck, so they loved that they could commit a creature to the battlefield and set me back a turn. And I was just like, yes, you're doing what I love to do. This is so awesome. So, yeah, there were some bonding moments over that, too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I was letting them choose, too, but I felt like, you know, and I certainly didn't stop anybody from playing the deck, but I definitely could. I will say that I encouraged other colors when I felt that maybe they, I don't want to say couldn't handle it, but like I said, if they were completely green, you know, I know that prowess could have been confusing or mm-hmm. things like that. So I would say, you know, hey, maybe this might be better suited for you, or maybe you might be into this instead. But right. I feel like it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. So. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Chris, what was your experience like being an attendee of the PAX? So this was your first time there. So what did you think when you first walked in the door on Friday and saw the scale of everything?
It kind of blew me away. Like, I've been to Gen Con, and so that's a rather large convention, but, like, PAX was very, like, in your face. Like, I walked in the door, and it was nice that I was greeted by Brad Nelson on my way in, so I can't sniff at that. That was pretty awesome. And then riding the escalator up to the expo floor was, you know, just kind of that feeling of, like, awesomeness and trepidation at the same time, to be like, ooh, what's gonna be in here? Like, I have no idea. And you're just, like, assaulted by, like, sound and video game images and just like everything, and it was just a very immersive experience. I was just blown away by how many people were there to celebrate, you know, PC gaming, whether or not they were into Magic or role-playing games or whatever. Like, everyone was just there to like fly their geek flag with pride and just do their thing, and I was just like floored by that. I was also really happy to see how many women were there really into like whatever game they were playing, or, you know, cosplaying or just doing their thing. And that was really awesome to see too. It was just very, like I said, just very, very intense, but I had so much fun. I mean, they had, you know, the floor where you can test out all the different games that are coming out. You know, there was merch, there was the diversity lounge that you could go into. And I really liked that they had a separate area to help promote people that, you know, are gay, transgender, they're, you know, just different, they have a disability, whatever. And I thought that was really, really awesome. I liked that Robert was helping out at the Take This charity booth, and I bought a deck box to support them. I thought that was really nice, and they had a special lounge where you could go and just relax if you wanted to, and he told me to tell people about it. Like, if someone looks burned out, tell them to go there and, you know, just take, you know, a few minutes to themselves. And I like that people in the community are trying to support each other and bring each other up, whether or not we're into the same types of games or we like the same things, that we're all trying to come together for a common goal. And I thought that that was really awesome. And I would definitely go again. There wasn't even enough time to do everything I wanted to do. I mean, yeah. You know, panels and shopping, and Seattle was just wonderful. Like, I was like looking up, you know, jobs while I was there to be like, you know, I would totally move here. Like, this is definitely my scene. I would love to help with LPS, you know, next year, because it seems like you guys had like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely like to have that little feather in my cap to say I helped someone learn how to play Magic and made a difference. So it was just so amazing overall. I have no complaints.
What did you think about Mock's boarding house? Because we went to F&M that night.
Oh my gosh. I felt like when you go into like the Wonka Chocolate Factory for the first time, you have the golden ticket. It was just awesome. I mean, I was impressed with how beautiful the store was, you know, like all the different like little like aesthetics, and the staff was like super nice, and they were all really happy to see us. And the tournament area was really cool. I liked that there was a section just for trading cards. Yeah, just the fact that they have like a fucking restaurant attached to it is awesome. Like, you don't even have to leave the grounds if you don't want to. Be like, okay, we're having lunch, dinner, whatever, we're gonna play a board game, we're gonna do F&M. It just seemed like everything was very centralized, and I liked that quite a bit. I bought quite a few cards as gifts. I also picked up some stuff for myself, and the players there were super nice. I had one guy like begging me to move there, and it was just like, it was just awesome. Having 40 people for modern and like another, I think was like 50 for standard, like blew my fucking mind. I was just like, this is amazing.
The scales are usually tipped the other way. Like in previous weeks, I know people have told me that Mox Boarding House has had like twice as many people for modern as for standard.
Mm. Oh, that's so awesome. I mean, we have like maybe 30 people here, and that's good, you know.
Yeah.
And depending on when tournaments happen, you know, it fluctuates. But it was just awesome to see that people come consistently for, you know, these two different formats, and just that the people there were really cool. And I don't know, it was just like a different type of experience. Like, I could see myself going and playing F&M there. Like, it was very welcoming and awesome.
Yeah, I would definitely play at F&M there if I lived closer. I go to Card Kingdom, which is owned by the same people, and it came first, and I guess the Mox Boarding House was basically like Card Kingdom turned up a notch. So they took everything that they already had and they improved upon it. But yeah, if I lived closer, I would totally be there.
Yeah, I was impressed with the energy. Like, we walked in the door, and I think his name is Frank.
Yes, Frank is awesome.
Frank watches Magic Mike, so he recognized me, and he was like, are you Erin Campbell? And I'm like, yeah. And he heard that we were talking about the modern tournament with the no ban list. And he was like, are you going to be here a while? Because I will totally throw another tournament for you, or I will host a tournament like that for you. And I was like, I'm only here for the weekend. Otherwise, I would love to play in that. And I remember they gave him the microphone, and he was running to F&M, and I felt like I was at a wrestling event. Because mm-hmm. he was like, F&M players! And he's going, I'm like, what the hell? Like, I'm looking around, and I'm expecting, like, sirens to come down and maybe a cage. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. And then they had the pairings on the TV, and everybody was really nice, but the best encounter that I had was this little boy. And this little boy comes out to me, and he goes, I think he must have been like 10 or 11. And he comes out to me, and he goes, and he doesn't look at me. Like, he does that thing that little kids do where they look past you or they look around you. And he goes, are you Erin? And I go, yeah. And he's like, I watch Magic Mice with my dad, and I think you're kind of funny. And I'm like, oh, thank you. I was like, what are you playing today, sweetie? And he's like, I'm playing Modern. And I was like, oh, well, I'm playing Standard. I'm playing Constellation. And pairings just came up, so I got to go find my seat. But good luck. And then he pauses, and he goes, Tron sucks. And I was like, yeah. I was like, I don't think I've ever played a deck that's happy to see it. I was like, good luck with the rest of your games. And he's like, okay. And then Chris was playing her last round, so we were all waiting for her to get done. And he happened to be sitting next to her, and I walked past him, and he happened to be playing Tron. And he just looks up at me and makes this little pouty face and shakes his head no.
Oh, I know that so- feel.
I embody that feel. So he was a really great kid. I was really happy that we went, and that was a good time. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday, the finals of Worlds took place, and the thing that stands out to me most about Worlds was that crazy modern metagame. Yeah. 6 Affinity, 4 Living End. Living End was 16% of the meta. What? And of course, I got tagged in all those tweets. 3 Boggles.
What are they doing here?
I know. 3 Twin, 1 Grixis, 1 Blue Red, 1 Rug, 2 Black White Tokens, which actually look kind of fun. That was, I believe, Shahar and Eric Froelich. Mm-hmm. 2 Green Black, 1 Jun, 1 Abzan, 1 Merfolk, 1 Burn. Sean McLaren on a spicy Blue Red Pyromancer control list. Mm-hmm. Moving away from Jeskai a little bit. And then Yuya, our friend Yuya Watanabe, played a Blue White control list with no Snapcaster Mages.
But 1 Sun Titan.
Right.
Yeah.
To get back Wall of Omens and Kitchen Finks. That's awesome.
Yeah. What did you guys make of this wild meta? Like, what do you think they were thinking?
I mean, it's definitely a consequence of several people working together in a very small tournament. I mean, when you say a large percentage of the field was on Living End, it's because 4 of the 24 players were all working together and they were all on that deck.
Mm-hmm. But that's very much an underdog deck, though. Like, I would think, if you were to tell me that I was going to a huge tournament like this, like, I would think of the usual suspects, like Twin and Affinity and Jund. And as much as I love Living End and as much as I've played it, I certainly wouldn't think of that being the deck to beat at a big tournament like this. Like, I'm just trying to understand, why did they pass on the big 3 or 4?
It could be that they just wanted to play something unexpected and try to dodge hate, because so much of modern metagaming is trying to dodge hate for your deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was really happy with, the variety. Like, I was just, like, blown away. I'm just, like you said, Living End, I was like, that's kind of different. And, yeah, the Blue-Red Pyromancer deck looked really cool, and Blue-White Control's my jam, so I was just really happy just to see it shaken up. Even if it was just for Worlds, I mean, it's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it definitely reinforced for me the feeling that, we've joked about Modern being this diverse and also stale format at the same time, and, it does sort of remind you that you can kind of play anything, and as long as you know the deck, you have a decent shot, and, this just happened to be a time where Living End was played and did reasonably well, so.
Right, yeah, it seemed like a couple people did stay in their wheelhouse. Like, I know Andrei Strosky was playing Merfolk, and even though he did come and prepare with people, obviously, he's been playing Merfolk online for quite some time, and I guess he just figured he knew the deck well enough that he could play it regardless of what the meta was like.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Some spicy tech that I saw, Brad Nelson had 3 copies of Hangerback Walker in his Jund list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which actually isn't bad, because if you think about it, if X is the casting cost and you flip that with Dark Confidant, you don't take anything.
Yep.
Mm. So that's not a bad bomb to draw when you're playing with that. Because part of the problem of Dark Confidant is, like, it's very difficult to play Tassigar and play Thundermaw Hellkite or play any of those bombs that you would like to play in a Jund deck, because you're going to end up hurting yourself. And, Hangerback Walker really does get around that.
Yeah, Hangerback's been making a lot of sort of crossover into Modern lately. I know I saw Jerry T tweeted the other day that he's been playing Abzan in Modern on stream, and he's playing Hangerbacks as well. So It seems like it's at least starting to gain ground in Modern.
Oh, man.
Bring back that Path to Exile. I played against it at the one tournament of the triple header pre-TQ a few weeks ago that I got to play, and every time I was like, Path? Snapcaster Path. Guess her hangerback walker's looking a little silly now.
But that might explain why people have started playing. There was talk about Abzan coming back as the black-green deck of choice, and maybe you're right, Katie. Maybe what's fueling that decision is Path to Exile.
Yeah,
Path to Exile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it Path of or Path 2?
Path 2.
Okay, I've been calling it Path of for ages, so feel free to bot me if I do that again. So.
Yeah, it's Path 2 Exile, just like it's Swords 2 Plowshares, and you can kind of remember that because they're one white to do something similar, to exile something.
Got it.
That's helpful.
Yeah, I tend to get the two confused, not really confused, but I remember we were talking about that young man who brought Splinter Twin to Legacy, and I remember just sort of shouting at the screen, I was like, Path to Exile it! I'm like, wait a minute, this is Legacy, they don't use that, Swords it! Just throw something at it! Like, that was just sort of my response to that, so. Yeah. Also on Saturday, there was the famous PAX party, which we all attended, and we got a chance to socialize a little bit, so did you all meet anybody interesting or have any great interactions?
I got to talk to Elantris, that was cool.
Okay, how was she?
She was cool. I had never actually met her before. I had talked to her on Twitter a little bit, and she had showed up in the chat on my stream once, and I was like, oh, Elantris is here. That's awesome. The next time I see her, I should thank her for watching my stream. So I thanked her for watching my stream, and we talked a little bit. And it was funny because I sort of, like, turned a corner and almost bumped into her, and I was like, oh, you're Athena. Hi. And Ifro was, like, right behind her. And he kind of, like, walked away and kind of, like, let her do her thing. And I was kind of sad because I was like, oh, man, I want to talk to Ifro about the Mets. Where is he going? Because you always see him wearing a Mets cap. So he and BDM are the two members of the Magic community that I really, really want to talk to about baseball sometime.
That would be awesome. Let's see. Well, before the party, I decided to camp out and wait for Brad because I wanted him to sign some tokens for me.
Such a creeper.
I know.
So cute.
like I'm standing in the back while we're watching coverage. I'm like, well, I'll just wait till he gets up and just see if he'll sign them for me. And then Trevor from MTG Diversity and I are talking about Canadian Highlander. And then all of a sudden Brad gets up and I'm like, oh, I need Brad to sign these tokens for me. And then Trevor's like, hey, Brad. And I'm just like, hey, Brad. So he came up and I said, you know, would you mind taking a picture with me and signing some tokens? There was a listener that had asked if I had planned on getting any pictures with him, and I'm like, I'll try. So he was like, sure. He's like, I can do the picture, but I might not be able to do the tokens until later. You know, is that okay? And he's like, unless you have them ready. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're in my purse. I'm prepared. Here's my Sharpie, everything. So we take the picture together. Trevor took it for me. And then we went over to one of the tables by the Learn to Play area, and he signed my tokens. And he's like, yeah, sorry. He's like, I have to go take care of a fire. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, I raided the store of all the tokens of you, and I just wanted to have you sign them. So he did that, and I thanked him, you know, so much for doing that and said, good luck with your fire. And then he was like, aw. And then he grabbed me and gave me, like, the biggest hug ever. And I was like, Brad Nelson gave me a hug. I don't know how to respond to this right now.
So, fires, apparently.
Yeah, I was like, hope that all went well. But, yeah, so then after that, just kind of got introduced to some Wizards people by Aaron and just ran into a bunch of different individuals. I can't probably even remember everybody's name, but I especially liked talking with, was it Kelly Diggs from Wizards? He seemed like a really awesome guy. And it was really nice to see him later on in the world building panel and be like, I talked to him. He was really cool. So, yeah, good time was had by all. Got to meet some really awesome people, and I'm just sad that I can't do it again for probably another year.
Yeah, Kelly was really awesome. I also got to meet Rich Hagen, and Rich said the funniest thing to me. He's like, I feel like I've known you forever. And I'm like, he's like, I know I've only met you. He's like, but I feel like I've known you forever. And I'm like, well, I'm a little verbal on my Twitter account. Maybe that's it. Like, I don't know. But he was very, very lovely, and he was sweet to me. And I got to meet MTG Color Pie again, who's really awesome. We got to hang out with Ant from the Snack Time podcast, who's great. I also met Athena as well. She sat down at my play table, and I quote, taught her how to play Magic. She was like, teach me how to play. And I was like, sure. I think the best part about the party for me was was being able to finding out how many people from Wizards listen to our show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was crazy.
And oh, I have geez. To say that in right? That was my first reaction is like when somebody from Wizards said they listened to the show, I would immediately respond with, I'm so sorry. Because I'm always worst case scenario girl. So I'm like, oh no, do they think we're idiots? Like, what are they thinking, you know? But it was all very positive. And in particular, Seattle's very big fans of our Hallie Santo.
Apparently.
I had one man in particular, his name is Sam. I don't recall his last name, but he's a very beautiful, bald gentleman. And in particular, he said that he loves the show. He said that other people at Wizards listen to the show. But in particular, he was very happy that their local gal, Hallie, was getting a platform and was becoming more popular. And I heard that a couple times throughout the night. And people are really proud of her, and they're happy that she's getting her name out there. So I made sure to tell Hallie that.
And really wanted to find all those people and hug them, but we were kind of pressed for time.
Yeah, it was the party was great though. The food was good. I mean, there was like there was salmon. There was couscous. I mean, there were bratwursts. It was eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also on Saturday, some spoilers came out. They finally announced the new cycle of lands. They are affectionately being referred to as Tango Lands.
Yeah.
Because it takes two to tango, or for them to come into play untapped. That's a cute little nickname. I'm pretty excited about those because they also have the land types in there. So they count as plains, islands, forests, mountains, and all of that.
Mm-hmm, so you can get them with fetch lands.
Absolutely. They also spoiled the big bad of this set, Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger. The Tron players were very happy. Yeah. I was pretty amazed by this card. It was nice being in the crowd and hearing the ooh when people saw how scary this was. Uh-huh. When he comes into play, if you cast him, you exile two permanents that your opponent controls. And every time he attacks, you exile the top 20 cards of their opponent library.
Gross.
That's not bad.
So gross.
That's pretty gross. I love the art on this, though. Like, I feel like you get to see so much more of him than you did in the previous illustration. Mm-hmm. So, in addition to that, there were some other noteworthy spoilers. Another Gideon, Ally of Zendikar. I was particularly excited about Ruinous Path. It is a sorcery speed hero's downfall that comes with the Awaken mechanic, which I think is really nice. Titan's Presence. I think this card is going to be something to look out for. This was the card that is colorless. It's an instant. It costs 3. And as an additional cost to cast it, you reveal a colorless creature from your hand, and then you exile a creature if its power is less than or equal to the revealed card's power. Mm-hmm. So sort of like we have Foul Tongue Invocation, Silumgar Scorn. This is sort of like an Eldrazi version of that. And I think effects like that are really going to inspire people to play those cards, and then this is going to end up being really good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to that, they also announced something called Zendikar Expeditions. Now, I'm still a little foggy on this, so if I'm doing this wrong, feel free to let me know. But if I understand this correctly, that in a pack, you have an extremely rare chance to pull a special edition shock land or fetch land that you can use in limited formats if you open it, but not in standard. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And they have some of the Ravnica duels with completely new art and a new frame, and also the fetches that we wanted, like Arid Mesa. I was pretty impressed with this. What did you all think?
I thought they were really cool. The art is great. They look beautiful in full art. We've never had those lands in full art before, so this is going to be a really cool opportunity for people who enjoy pimping out their decks.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Those Hallowed Fountains. God.
I really like the steam vents.
They're gonna cost so much money.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I heard different numbers about how often they come up, so I'm not really sure. Like somebody said it's like one every 5,000 packs or something, and one person said like, oh, one per case, and I don't know. I've been hearing a lot of different numbers about how rare
The metric they used when they announced it was they are slightly more common than a foil mythic.
Hmm.
I don't know what exactly that means, but that's what they were saying.
I will say on the flip side, though, that the hype for this set is enormous. Like, after the party on Saturday, people were... here's a really bad metaphor for you. Have you ever seen the movie Batman and Robin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know when Poison Ivy does her thing and she has that auction and all the horny gentlemen are building on her? I kind of felt like people were like that with Rise of Eldrazi. So people were like, I'll take 5 cases of Battle for Zendikar. Mm-hmm. And then somebody would see that and be like, I'll take 6 cases of Battle for Zendikar. And it turned into this really screwed up auction. And people want this set. Like people want, I mean, pre-orders were just flying around like crazy. And I think this set's going to be a really big seller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was at the card shop earlier talking to my buddy and that owns a store. And he was like, yeah, I have pre-ordered more of this set than of any other set. And he's like, don't worry, I'll get enough. You know, I said, well, I for sure want at least 2 fat packs because I want full art lands, damn it. And he's like, don't worry, there will be plenty for all. And I'm like, I hope so, because I'm like super ready to go.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about fat packs. I need to have a store, like, right away.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with Robert, my boyfriend, earlier today. We were debating about what exactly we were going to buy because our store started pre-orders today. And he was saying that he really wanted to buy as many fat packs as possible because he wants play sets of all the full art lands. Mm-hmm. So that's probably what we're going to be doing. I'm probably going to be using some store credit to buy boxes, but we'll probably be getting a ton of fat packs as well.
I'm waiting until they announce that they're reprinting Bloodgas, which I know they're going to do. And once they do that, I'll be happy to put in my order for 2 boxes and get all the new Bloodgas because they're totally coming and you can't tell me nothing. So our last day there, Hallie, you checked out the Zendikar world building panel. How was that?
I did. It was interesting. It was different from world building panels in years past because typically I've gone to the last 2 PAXes. I went to the Theros party and the Khans party in years past. And usually on Saturday night when they throw the party, they just sort of like put the cards up there and people mill around and look at them and they'll show the trailer. They'll talk a little bit about what's going on, but they didn't do, you know, a full preview show like they did last year. They usually save some of that for the world building panel. And so when we went to the world building panel, it was a bit different than usual. Like, they didn't talk about mechanics or go too much into the designer development of the set. They talked a lot more about flavor. They had people from the art department up there. They had Kimberly Cranus from the creative department, who does some of the writing for Magic, and they were just talking about, you know, Uncharted Realms and some of the concept art, which was really cool. I'm unfortunately not much of a Vorthos, so a little bit of that was lost on me, but it seemed like a lot of the crowd really enjoyed it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we visited Card Kingdom. Chris, that was your first time going. What'd you think of the store?
I thought it was awesome. Like, just like the feeling that I got when I went into Mox Boarding House, there was just like an overwhelming feeling of like community and just like nice presentation. You know, they had a very nice store as well. I liked the back area where all the tournaments take place that has a little garage door that opens up, and they had a mural on the wall and just like everything. I'm like, this is so cool. I'm like, I wish we had like a secret room that we're just like, oh, you guys here played Magic the Gathering, whoop, door goes up, here we go. like that's so cool. And it had the cafe next door and, you know, the trading card area and everything, and I was just like, yeah, I would totally come here for F&M. Mox Boarding House, Card Kingdom, both of them I would totally frequent if I lived in the area. And the people were super nice. I got some more cards. And it was just awesome. I loved it. Like, I really wish I could have bought more of their merch because I would love to promote them and be like, oh, you've never been to Mox Boarding House before, Card Kingdom? Let me tell you about that store. Like, I talked to some guy at the post office today. Like, he's like, oh, you send in a deck to someone? I'm like, no, I'm sending some cards to my buddy. And we were talking. I was telling him about Mox Boarding House and about Card Kingdom. He's like, oh, he's like, that sounds really cool. I'm like, yeah, man, you should totally go check it out.
Yeah, the thing I love most about those stores is just seeing how healthy and vibrant their communities are. And that's not to say that Milwaukee's is dead per se, but you can go to Card Kingdom or Mox Boarding House any day of the week, and there's something to do. Like, somebody will play with your ass. Like, you don't go and there's nothing to do. Unfortunately, with the game stores in Milwaukee that I like going to, by the way, you know, unless there's a PPTQ happening or F&M happening, there's just nothing going on. Like, you can't stroll into Pink Bunny on a Tuesday and find anything to do. You just can't. You know, you can't go to Board Game Barrister on a Sunday and play a game. We just don't have the kind of community to support that. But, you know, these stores do. You know, you can go to Mox and you can go to Cafe and it's packed. And just being around that kind of energy just feels so good. And it makes you not want to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have scheduled Magic 4 days a week, I believe, at Card Kingdom. And even if you're not there for that, there's always stuff going on, like you said. Even like Thursday nights, they typically use the Magic space for board gaming. But there's a group of people who organize their own budget EDH league, and they just show up and play. So there's always something to do.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So. Awesome.
So, Katie, let's go ahead and steer this back to you a little bit, because you have something interesting going on. You said something the other day that you are participating in, and I've seen other judges talk about it as well, but I have to admit I'm not really clear as to what it is. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this Exemplar program that you all are gushing about lately?
So the Exemplar program was instated last winter, I believe. So it's fairly new, and it's kind of... They wanted to... Let me start over. So when payment for Grand Prix and Star Cities and everything moved away from foils and back to, you know, cash or boxes or product like that, everybody was a little disappointed to see foils go. And so they kind of devised a new way to incorporate foils from Wizards as well as recognizing great people in the community. So the Exemplar program is where... If you're an L2 or above, you have a certain number of slots to recognize really awesome people. And so for an L2, I can recognize 2 L1s and 1 judge of any level, or somebody who's involved in the judge program in some way. I'm not sure if they actually have to be a leveled judge. Like, we have a bunch of scorekeepers and stuff, and I don't know if some of them are certified, but, so you can just, and you type up like a little recognition. And it's, you know, they have some guidelines for it, but it doesn't have to be like, you did really great on that deck check that one time. Like, it can be like, I had a mental breakdown and you really helped me through it that one time behind the scenes. That was really excellent. So it can be a lot of whatever you want it to be. There's a lot of freedom. They do have guidelines, but it's just a really great way to recognize people in the program that might not get recognition otherwise. Especially in rural places where, you know, I know we have great L1s in Montana, but that doesn't mean that any of the L5s or any of Wizards of the Coast know they exist, or that I exist for that matter, you know? And so I did get a few recognitions, and I gave a few recognitions for this next wave. And it's kind of interesting because it's supposed to be something that you can be proud of. Like, I got recognized for being awesome. And that's great, but there's always, like, just a hint of resentment where people are like, why didn't I get recognized for being awesome? So it seems like every wave there's a big discussion surrounding, you know, whether you should post that you got recognized, whether you should post the foils you got sent, because everybody kind of gets a different thing based on some scale that somebody has made up somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of an interesting, you know, discussion about whether you should be publicizing that. I think personally that people should, because if you're getting recognized for doing something great, I don't think anybody goes through and reads every single recognition that's listed in the judge apps. And so I think it's really cool if you're like, hey, I did this thing and I got recognized for it, and I think that's really cool. But the people that I recognized for this last wave was Crystal Rose, who I talked about 2 episodes ago, I think. Yeah, she's great. And I talked about our San Diego experience. And then I recognized an L1 here in Montana who's doing, taking huge strides towards becoming L2. His name is Ben Wild. He gives decks to new players. He gives them cards from his own collection. He tries to get everybody involved in the game. And he's just a really great person. And then for my any level recognition, I gave it to Chris Schaefer, who's an L2 in Spokane, and he is the only L2 in Spokane, which is a big area to cover, and he has been doing, like, judge classes every week. He puts them all together. He has, like, you know, presentations, and people come, and they attend this, like, class-type thing at their game store, And he's getting a lot of people certified and making really great strides over in Washington. So when I move over to Pullman next year, which is about an hour and a half away from Spokane, I'm hoping that there's some other L2s there so they can come judge my tournaments so I can play in them. But yeah, it's a really great program, and it's still new, so it feels like every wave they kind of make not new rules, but just steering guidelines like, hey, we noticed this happened last time, try to be more specific, and just things like that. So it's very new and upcoming, and they're just trying to work out all the kinks. But I think so far it's being received really well.
Cool. Well, I can certainly say that you deserve the awesome nominations that you received, because we think you're pretty awesome.
No, thank you. You guys are
Yeah, it's been great seeing the tweets come out and seeing people receive their packages, because they're people who I would certainly nominate if I were a judge, and it's nice to see them it's nice to see them get that recognition that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Listener question this week. Be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. We got a nice rush of them recently. We've got another half a dozen new questions to chew on. So thank you all for replenishing our reserves. We really appreciate that. And this question in particular comes to us from a young lady named Cecily. It's a very pretty name, Cecily. And she says, hey, ladies, first off, I adore the show. You are also intelligent and funny, and the show has been a bright spot in my life lately, which has been kind of dark. Thank you for that. There are very few women who play at my local game store. I play there twice a week, work allowing, and there are no other female players that I've ever seen there more than once or twice. Most of the women that I've encountered there are not very experienced and or spiky. Most of them are just starting to make baby steps away from the kitchen table, which is great, and she emphasizes that. But for example, at FNN last week, there was a lady I'd never seen before playing next to me. She was playing the same deck, but playing it badly. Now, when I play against folks who seem to be struggling, I don't hesitate to give them deck or play advice after the match. But I don't want other players against who I might play to get any extra advantage, because I like to give myself the best chance possible to win and get a good record. My dilemma is that this makes me feel shady. To see a fellow lady braving the sausage fest that is our local game store and not giving her assistance because I want to win. What are your thoughts on this? I want other women to feel welcome at our store and to have a good time playing, but I just don't want to help them beat me. Thanks.
I'm still laughing about sausage fest. My bad. But I can see where she might, you know, feel like she was being shady. I can definitely understand that feeling if you're like, well, I want to help this person be better because I know the deck that they're playing. But at the same time, you're like, but what if I tell them how to be better and then they kind of just like wreck my face off? So I can get that. But then again, necessarily, you might not play them. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with maybe like after FNM be like, hey, you know, you want to go get something to eat. You know, you want to talk about your deck. You know, I'm glad, you know, to see that you're coming into the store. You know, so it's not like trying to think of how to word it. I think it's good to try to, you know, make friends, give advice, and have to try to put some of your, I guess, pride in your back pocket a little bit, I guess, because you should want the other people in your store to play better, because then when you're playing against people that are better than you or, you know, on your level, that helps you become a better player. So I would definitely encourage her to, you know, try to give advice if she feels comfortable doing so and if the person's receptive to it. And, you know, sometimes there's just people that are going to be better than you and they could be someone that you taught. I mean, I guess it's kind of like, you know, the Sith, you know, there's always two, but eventually the apprentice has to do away with the master, so to speak. So, you know, you kind of got to, you know, just, I guess, go with it in stride. Like, I would feel pretty good if someone that I taught how to be a better player, like, totally wrecked my face off, I'd be like, yes, it's working. So that's my thoughts on it. So I would definitely encourage her to help if necessary.
I think Chris touched on something important when she mentioned giving advice if people are receptive to it. I know that I'm always happy to give advice after matches, of course, on, you know, decks or card choices or strategy. But it's sometimes difficult, you know, after you beat someone, they're not always receptive to advice.
Me.
I would say, if Cecily is interested in helping the women in her community, I would say the best thing to do is, you know, maybe talk to them after the match. Talk to them about what their goals are, you know, what they like to play. Are they interested in coming to FNM more regularly? Do they want to go beyond FNM? And then maybe try to get a women's group together. So that would be an environment where you are more... you're focusing on giving them advice. So, like, for example, we have a Lady Planeswalker Society here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And when I go to LPS, I obviously try to win my matches. Of course, I do that all the time. But my primary focus is not on winning, but on helping everyone else get better. So if you start a Lady Planeswalker Society or you have one in your area, or if you even want to have these women over to your place for like a ladies' night draft or like a ladies' night commander event, standard event, whatever format you guys like to play, where the focus is on helping everyone get better and, you know, giving other people advice, I think that would be a better place to have those interactions.
Yeah, I definitely agree with both Hallie and Chris. I used to think kind of the same way. Like, I would see Brooke helping people after their match or whatever, and I was like, why are you doing that? Like, they might just beat you. And he was like, well, if you want to get better as a player, you have to be playing against better people. And mm-hmm. so it's really a balance of, yes, winning is really fun, but once you go to, like, a bigger tournament, whether it's a PPTQ or a Grand Prix or Star City, there's going to be people there that are better than you. And that's just, you know, how the game of Magic works. And so if you want to start doing well in things like those or getting more competitive, I think it's a good idea to try and have a local game store that's filled with people who are getting better at the game. Because if nobody ever tells them this is how you improve, then they can never get better. And I think that if somebody comes back week after week and keeps losing, that's not fun. You know, some people love the game enough where that's enough, but once you win that first match at FNM and you're just so proud of yourself, if you've always been in the 0-4 bracket and you move up to the 1-3 bracket, like, that's a huge step up, and people get excited about that kind of thing. And so I think encouraging somebody to keep returning, it's good if you can help them get better, because I think that's a very likely way for them to keep coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Instead of looking at it as, you know, I'm going to give this person advice, which they're going to use against me, instead of thinking of them as your opponent, think of it like, think of what you're getting out of the deal that's positive. Like, yeah, the information that I give this person, or the, you know, the advice that I give them might make them a better player, which I can benefit from. Like, I can get some of that knowledge then, or maybe they're playing a deck that I could be practicing against more regularly. You know, try to redefine your image of success or winning and things like that. For me, I tend to identify with decks, so, and I also identify with my gender as well. So if I happen to not do well in an event, but I see another lady being top 32, I'm really happy for her, because I feel like one of us still got in there. And whether it was me or whether it was her, one of us did it. And so I'm really happy for her. I also tend to play really obscure decks. And when you play an obscure deck, you do feel this sort of camaraderie with other people like you. So let's say I go to Legacy 5K in 2 weeks, and I don't do very well, but if another Dredge player makes top 8, that's a Dredge deck in top 8. That's fantastic. And, you know, it's just being able to be happy for people who are like you, even though it's not you, and just realizing that it's still a win, it's still a net positive when those things happen, and then being able to be happy for them when it does.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, and if you help someone else get better, then congratulations, you've gained a testing partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So last but not least, before we go, Katie, you indicated you have a very special stream coming up. Is it this coming weekend?
Yes. I have 3 days off in a row.
I know. For you, that's like an eternity.
I know. I'm going to watch so much Netflix. and study and whatnot. But yeah, so I'm going to Shakespeare in the Parks Saturday evening, but I think Saturday morning, mid-morning, I'm going to be streaming. Hallie sent me a free draft coupon, Rise of the Eldrazi, which I've never played before, so we'll see how that goes. And then I might also be streaming on Monday. Sunday, we're having our proxy legacy tournament for the month. So I think I still have, I'm still a few cards short for my legacy deck, but I think I'm going to go play that. And if I'm feeling really crazy, I'll stream Sunday night too. So I hope it's a stream filled weekend.
So if anybody's listening and they want to tune into that stream, they should definitely do that because your stream is going to be awesome.
Hopefully it's a lot better than last time.
Well, you've got your new supercomputer now, don't you?
Yes.
And you're not going to draft all the lands.
And I'm not going to draft all the land. And I'm not going to play an 80-card limited deck. So, we've got some goals.
Maybe you could, like, are you still wearing your cyborg enhancements?
He didn't give me one this week, and I was so sad. Aww. I was like, Nate, that cyborg patch, though. And he was like, no more. And I was like, He knows I'm addicted.
I was hoping you'd make some like really cool modifications, and when you're streaming, it would like feed you draft choices where you're like, I wonder which card I should pick, and then boop 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 boop, and it would tell you, and it'd be like, you know, that Katie Neal, she just blitzed like three drafts in a row. What's her secret? Boop 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 boop, and you'd be like this drafting machine.
You've got really high hopes for me. I'm impressed.
Of course I do. You're one of my friends. I don't imagine you doing poorly at anything you do.
Oh, okay, well, don't watch the stream. I'm still working out the Modo kinks. Like, I promise I'm not really bad at Magic, but Modo makes me feel like I am because I don't know how to click stuff. And, you know, I've clicked through, like, my first turn without playing a land before, and I'm like, oh, God. So just slight things like that, you know.
All right, well, I'll forgive you, but I actually, I don't have too much going on this weekend. I know I have to get back on Modo myself, because again, there's the 5K coming in 2 weeks, so I have to practice Legacy, and there's actually a new, well, not really new, but there's a different dredge list that I saw the other day that I've been meaning to try, and it's definitely one that I have to get used to piloting, because it's a more conservative approach to dredge, so I will probably be online as well, and I keep meaning to fire up my bargain bin stream, and I never get around to it, so... So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Twitch at HalCanSan. You can look at some of my previous drafts and my cube updates on my Tumblr, which is magicandrealism.tumblr.com. You can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com, and you can read my writing here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. You can find me on Twitch at MeanMuggerMTG. Or you can send me an email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is THKRIZ. That's to Chris. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. That's yo to Chris. My Tumblr is also to Chris, and last time I mentioned my Snapchat, so I'll drop it again. It's Cryptic Command, but spelled with K's.
Man, I don't even have a Snapchat. I've got to get on that. I'm just now firing up an Instagram, and I feel like a total old.
It's not total old.
I still don't know how to do Instagram.
Occasionally post pictures of my dog. That's it.
Yeah, I posted a lot of my PAX pictures to it, and then people that don't even follow me on Twitter have started following me on Instagram. They're like, well, she doesn't post that much, so all right. So it's been a good time. So. And my name is Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can also email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And you can find the show every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye.